Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Dewey Jelm back on the show. Dewey just recently got home from Lake Erie as well. We just talked to his traveling partner and co-star on Tour Level Gold, John Hoyer, earlier this week. And Dewey had a little bit of time and was generous enough to spend it on an interview with me for this podcast. So for that, I am very thankful. And we cover pretty much as much as we possibly can and more in this amount of time. Everything getting caught up with Dewey and everything he's got going on at home and all the fishing and Lake Erie. He finished fifth place. A few pounds behind his teammate John, obviously, who won. We already talked about that, but yeah, Dewey Jelm, it's always a pleasure. Let's get to it. The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota, and a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems: the dangerously cold water temperatures, and you know what, the air temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Dress warm, dress in layers, at least bring layers along, but definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. What's new with you, man? Let's get caught up.
So there's a lot of new stuff going on this year with me. Where when it first started back, last fall, when you start trying to get new sponsors for the new and upcoming year, and kind of along them lines. And then probably the thing that if people have been following me on any social media platforms at all, have probably seen me make different posts about our dog Berkeley. And we found out in January, actually, when I was on a fishing trip up in Devil's Lake, that she actually has cancer. And it's been a kind of an emotional roller coaster with that, just because, like, in South Dakota, there's not a lot of vets that deal with cancer. So once we found out that she actually had cancer, then it was like trying to go to different universities throughout the U.S. Just to try to basically prolong her life and make sure that she was comfortable. Obviously, we kind of know what the outcome is going to be, but for us, we're comfortable, if we can make her last another 6 or 8 or 10 months, like, that's worth everything to us. So we basically just, we started making the phone calls, called all over the U.S. to different universities. At first, kind of felt like we were, basically getting pushed around, and a lot of these universities, I'm sure, are overwhelmed, but it was like 2 month waits to get in to get seen before you can even do anything. And just with how fast her tumor was growing, we didn't think that was going to be the best route. So we actually found a place in Colorado, in Boulder, Colorado, that got us in right away. We did radiation on her. The tumor shrunk probably, I would say, over half. And then now, basically, here we are. We did a couple other treatments where we did bone infusions with basically the help of pain management and stuff. But here we are, 4 months later, almost 5 months later, and she's doing really good. You can tell that she's not 100%, but if she didn't have that big bump on her face, honestly, I would just think that it's maybe age catching up with her a little bit.
It's that personal side that people probably never get a chance to see, man. Like you said, it's a super emotional thing. I mean, is everybody taking everything okay?
Yeah. I mean, it's better on us now, but it was definitely hard in the beginning. There was a lot of sleepless nights, and like, I'm sure other people that have dealt with this kind of stuff, whether it's with pets or loved ones or whatever, but it's like borderline depression. Just that's all you think about, and you want to help them out, but you can't do anything. So, but yeah, everybody's getting better. I'm sure this is probably going to be the last summer that she gets to spend in a boat, but yeah, you just take it one day at a time and make the best of it. So, but yeah, she's a happy dog right now, that's for sure.
Man, how old is your dog, Berkeley?
She's like 10 and a half now.
So you got a lot of fishing memories with that dog.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, while they're here, you do your best, right, to capture the moments and, you know, just spend that quality time with any family member, especially, you know, you never forget about pets and dogs. You know, even like you say, the inevitable, cancer or not, there's an inevitable there. And, yeah, man, take the pictures and never forget. What's new with you in fishing, too, to take that pivot? You're just getting back from Erie. We're probably going to have to hear about that, too, a little bit. But
yeah, there's as far as the fishing world, there's a ton of new things. You know, probably one of the newest things for me is this year I switched electronics companies and I'm running all Garmin's now. So I'm just trying to get used to all that stuff. But say that they make a great product is definitely an understatement. But it's just, like I said, it's getting used to it. It's time on the water and it's something that I haven't got to play around much with it. I got to use it quite a bit this past ice fishing season. So I am definitely getting a lot more comfortable with it, but you know, that was a huge step for me, as far as the fishing, and now just, you know, we're one tournament in already. We just got back from Lake Erie, minus the wind. That was one of the funnest fishing trips I've ever been on. From the moment that we got there, it was like, basically that's all you caught was like 25 to 27 inch fish wherever you went. So it was an unbelievable fishing trip. Even if we wouldn't have been fishing a tournament, it was really fun. But we got to do some new stuff out on Lake Erie that we had a pretty good idea that that's kind of something that we were going to be doing before we even went there. But you know, like most people know, Lake Erie is known for trolling. And obviously it works really well, but we just felt like that if we could cast at these fish that were a little bit bigger and we could identify them with our forward facing, that, you know, that might be something that would stand out a little bit better than trolling, because I'll be honest, I've trolled plenty, but I am definitely not the world's greatest troller, and I don't know if I could compete with some of them guys that are, you know, that's what they do is troll. They have the different directions, the currents, all that kind of stuff. There's so much more in the trolling than just putting your boards out, setting them to a certain depth and going. You can do that on certain days, but the guys that really get them good trolling definitely have it dialed into the next level for sure.
How many times have you actually fished tournaments on Lake Erie?
So this is my second time I've ever fished a tournament on Lake Erie. I went to Lake Erie probably 10 or 15 years ago in the spring on just a little fun trip with me and one of my buddies. And then we fished 2 years ago, Dunkirk, New York, which is on the eastern side of Lake Erie. And we did, that was the championship in the fall. And this is my first, you know, actual springtime tournament on Lake Erie.
I mean, how much does that play a factor for you?
I like it, honestly. I like not having, I mean, history is good for, you know, being comfortable when you go somewhere, but you know, if you're a guy that lives and dies on history and it's not going for you when you go do plan A, B, and C, then you kind of start to scramble where, you know, for me, even in the past, I look at a lot of these tournaments that I've done well in, and it's, you know, my first or second time there, I don't have a preconceived notion of this is what you need to do and this is the bait that you need to use and, you know, all this other stuff. It's a clean slate. And that's honestly, I think, been one of the biggest things that has helped me is just, you know, obviously I watch a lot of YouTube. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I try to get as much information as possible to when you're going to these places, but I don't care if I don't know a body of water before I go there for the first time with the electronics and everything today. If you spend a couple of days just driving around, getting a feel for the different water conditions and temperatures and clarity and all this stuff, you can piece it together fairly fast. It's definitely a lot easier than it used to be, 10, 15 years ago when, 2D was kind of the only thing that you had. Now with side scan and down scan and all your different stuff that you get to use, forward facing sonar, all that stuff, it just makes the learning curve so much faster to break this stuff down. And it doesn't always mean that you find the winning fish or that you can catch them, but it gives you a good start. And going into a tournament, I don't need to have the best practice in the world going into the tournament. If I can just get a little bit of a clue on what I need to be doing, whether it's, colors or a certain presentation or whatever it is, that's all I'm really looking for. If I only catch two fish for the whole pre-fish, that's honestly fine with me. If I just have a little bit of taste of what direction I need to be going.
I mean, you said something there, I don't think I've ever really stuck anybody with this particular question, but like for you on Erie, you're not from there. You don't have a ton of personal history fishing high level tournaments there, right? Like we're kind of talking about that. You do have good information. You've got a squad of guys, you got good information around you, right? So I don't want to, exclude that. But just being that that's not your home body of water and you don't have endless amounts of experience there, you talk about consuming content. You talk about, just sort of keeping your eyes and ears open to everybody. What do you see as being some of those preconceived notions about Lake Erie? Like when you're trying to keep your radar up as to like, what are some of the ruts that you maybe see other people in? Or does that make any sense?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, this history shows like, generally the fish go in and spawn, on the west side, and then they kind of make their way through the islands and go back to the east. And so that's kind of like, that's what they do on Lake Erie. Well, history has shown like generally around, Bass and the Kelly's Islands and that kind of stuff is like a very, very popular spot to fish. And obviously there's a ton of fish there. But that was one of the areas that I kind of first went to in practice and definitely caught a bunch of fish there. But what's unique about that area is that there's a ton of current that goes through there. All them fish kind of funnel through them different passages or narrows, which creates a bunch of current. But that water just kind of always has, I mean, if there's a bunch of wind, can be dirty in that area or get dirty. And then one of the other things is basically if you're going to be fishing in the same area that everybody else is, more than likely, unless you're doing something different, you're going to be catching all the same kind of fish as everybody. So unless you make a big move or you're doing a different presentation, that's, the only way that I've found to really separate yourself from somebody else. But some of that stuff that I, look at is, satellite imagery from past. What happens when you get a week worth of strong blows on Lake Erie? Where does that dirty water go? And then are kind of the areas that you kind of cancel out or, try to focus on other areas that are going to have the right color of water. So satellite imagery. And then like I was kind of talking in the beginning where all them fish kind of go, west right away in the spring, they do their spawning. And then they kind of make their way back to the east or the vast majority of them do. So just having that kind of information, knowing what them fish do, the travel routes, stuff like that, that's some of the information that I really pay attention to. And then, like I said, probably the biggest one is the satellite imagery. If you can figure out where that, kind of how the current and generally speaking, where the dirty water is going to go to once you do get a big blow, that's kind of the information that I'm really, really focusing on.
What would you say is the most intimidating part about, fishing a big tournament on Lake Erie? And I'm not assuming you are intimidated, but you know, what is like, what is the biggest hurdle? What, like, what is the thing that makes Lake Erie compared to other places?
So for me, I was never really intimidated looking at, you know, you're sitting at home and you're looking at the contour map and you're, oh, I should go here. I should go here. This looks good. Well, when you get out there, it's a whole different ball game. Literally the only time that I was like, holy cow, this place is absolutely huge. Again, from the first time when I was out there 2 years ago, is you literally, you put your boat in the water and you pull out of the harbor and you're just like, all you see is water. and it's like, where do you go? Cause out there, like, it's a lot different than fishing around home where, you know, around home, you're fishing structure, contour, stuff like that, where, and I'm talking like drop-offs where it's, you know, 10 feet up close to shore. And then, you know, within casting distance, you're in 60 foot of water. So like that's, you know, and then there's points and all this other stuff. So that's the kind of structure that I'm kind of used to fishing. On Lake Erie, it's a giant bowl. When there's contour change, it's like a foot contour change over 2 miles or something like that. It's just, there's not a lot of structure to hold these fish. So what's kind of intimidating, I think, for most people is that, you know, everybody just wants to get out there and go start fishing right away, which I'm no different. But I really just kind of hold myself back and just, you know, like I said earlier, just drive around, get a feel for the water, and then just really pay attention to your 2D sonar and just start watching and seeing where these fish are at, whether it's a certain depth, a certain part of the lake, or what it is. But you just have to spend time driving around and figuring out where them fish are versus just driving out for 5 minutes and jumping up front and starting fishing.
Yeah, man. I think that, you know, sort of those descriptions, I think, are just, I take a lot away from it because I've never been there. You know what I mean? And so yep. You kind of, when I'm watching the tournaments and I'm listening to the interviews, everybody's got Facebook, you know, they go on, they make a, you know, an update of the day or whatever it is, you know, and I'm paying attention all through pre-fish and I'm watching everybody. I'm hearing these things, you know, I'm hearing these explanations, but, you know, so many of the anglers on the NWT, especially if they've been to Erie many times, you know, some of these guys, just the way they talk about it, it's generalized and, you know, it's almost like it's like an assumption that, you know, I know what it's like to be there.
Sure.
You know, talking about dirty water and just how big it is. So like when you say things like, you know, a 2 foot contour sometimes is like a mile or more wide. Like, I mean, those are the kind of details that really paint that picture. You know what I mean? So I really appreciate that. How would you characterize your pre-fish?
It was seriously probably one of the most fun pre-fish that I've ever had. Honestly, you know, a lot of these places we go to, we don't want to catch a bunch of fish because we don't want to, you know, if they are resident fish or whatever, we don't want to catch a bunch of them fish. But Lake Erie, it's, I mean, there's millions of walleyes. Like, it doesn't matter, catch them all. So we were just, you know, we would rifle through all kinds of different baits, colors, whatever, just trying to find the exact perfect bait, the exact presentation that we needed to be doing to get these fish to bite. But it was funny because like the first day we got there, I actually fished with myself or by myself for, oh, I don't know, like the first 6 or 7 hours, the first day I got there. I mean, it was a ball. I caught, I don't know how many, 27 to 29 inch fish, but it was a riot. It was like within the first couple casts, I mean, I think I caught my first one was like a 28 incher and I was just like, holy cow, this is too good to be true. And I was throwing all kinds of different baits at him and I could basically get him to bite any bait. But come later in the week, we found out that, you know, they kind of separated. It just needed to be something a little bit different than what, you know, some of the baits that I was throwing. But, you know, I obviously tried the trolling thing. The second day of pre-fish, I had one of my good buddy, Caden. He was with me and we went over into this area and started trolling and I felt like I was a pro troller. Like we actually absolutely smashed them over there. And then we picked up and we'd run around and then we'd go cast jigs out and then we'd catch them with jigs. And it was just like, I don't know. It was like, they're biting everywhere. Obviously everybody's got to be catching them this good. If we're catching them like this. So We did the trolling thing a bunch, especially knowing what the forecast was going to be with the big winds and not knowing if we'd be able or where we'd even be able to to run to. So we wanted to have a backup plan. So trying to dial in basically two different presentations where we wanted to be casting, but if that wasn't going to happen, we also wanted to be trolling or wanted to have a good idea for, you know, sets back on with certain baits and speeds and all that kind of stuff. So kind of doing two different presentations for pre-fish. And, you know, there was a lot of days, I'll be honest, where I'd go on the morning, full intention to troll all day long. And I would troll for the first 3 or so hours, 4 hours without a bite or maybe catch one. And I would spin around and go right through that exact same area. And within 15 minutes catch, you know, one or two quality fish. So it was just, you know, kind of eye opening for me for that tournament, just to, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. And we only need 5 of the right casts a day to do it. So pre-fishing was fun. It was challenging at times with the wind and the whatnot, but Lake Erie is obviously no joke. When it's blowing 20-30 mile an hour, you just got to really take your time and pick the places that you can fish. And you know, if possible, if it's an offshore wind, try not to get offshore too far so it's too rough. But we did have one blow day where we got the boys together, and we've never done this before, but we ran over to Detroit. We had Caden, Paul, Chris, John, and Dusty, and we all hopped in Dusty's boat. We went over to the Detroit River, and that was a fun day. We did that on, I think it was Friday, and caught a bunch of walleyes and a sturgeon and whatnot. So yeah, just kind of a relaxing way to kind of start the pre-fishing the whole week. So a lot of fun.
The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota. And a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems, the dangerously cold water temperatures. And you know what? The air temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Dress warm, dress in layers, at least bring layers along. But definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Jigging versus trolling. You know, and I'm always coming from a place of, you know, non-tournament angler, but learning from a tournament angler. Jigging versus trolling for a lot of people just going out on any kind of body of water, reservoir, you know, natural lake, great lake, whatever it is. Like, a lot of times, you know, we kind of evaluate the spot and like what's best right here, like what's best to, mm-hmm. you know, get the most bites or, you know, accomplish whatever our particular goal is. But a lot of times we just evaluate how a spot sets up and decide if it's a trolling spot or a casting spot. What's it like on Lake Erie? I mean, you're kind of describing how you were trolling on and casting on, you know, the same fish. Like, was there something about casting that allowed you to fish new or different types of spots that weren't trolling spots, or what's it like out there for that?
Yeah, so that's kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, as far as like there's just not a lot of contour, so it's literally like you're going through the same area. There's nothing, you know, in particular where there's a lot of these places that we go to that set up perfect for trolling, where there's one or two fish or, you know, 5 fish scattered along a half mile stretch. So obviously going through there and pulling cranks through there at 2 mile an hour, you can cover that 4 times in the amount if you go through and just pitch a jig. So your odds are obviously way better trolling the spot like that. But in this scenario where it's literally when you put your trolling motor down, you look on forward facing, 2D side scan, doesn't matter. There's fish literally everywhere you look. Very, very target rich. You're never not in fish. So one thing that really stood out to me was like, I know that my trolling or that, you know, when I'm pulling crankbaits, I know that I would have 6 boards out. I know that my baits are going through fish basically at all times. So if I'm not reeling in a fish, basically, you know, every 5 minutes or something, like something's wrong, whether it's colors, speed, whatever, me not knowing how to troll, whatever it is, like that's like, that was the deal for me. So then I would, you know, turn around and cast on them, and I would just, you know, literally pick out the biggest fish that I could find, and where they were setting at in the water column. And honestly, once you got a bait in front of that fish, once we figured out that it was that jig and plastic deal, once we got that, once you would get a bait in front of a fish, I would say 75, maybe even 85% of the time, they're going to eat it. And some of, it was just one of them crazy things that, I don't know why trolling wasn't more productive, because, you know, I heard a lot of stories, and even for me, firsthand experience, the first couple of days when we were out there, trolling was really good. But I don't know what happened. The water definitely muddied up a little bit, but I just don't know why they weren't biting crankbaits better than what they were. But one thing I do know is that they definitely could not resist a jig and plastic.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about the tournament. Like, you know, we're talking about this, we're generalizing Lake Erie, but the reality is you guys, especially on day two, you guys had very interesting fishing conditions, especially the fact that, like, you and John and I think Hunter, he was casting too, wasn't he? And yep. Yeah, I mean, there's just like a bunch of guys, you know, like these were not ideal casting conditions, especially, you know, with forward sonar. I mean, yeah, you could grab a rod and make a cast out the side of the boat anytime you want. But I'm talking about, like, you know, what you guys were trying to accomplish. Like, what was that experience like, especially on day two, you know, trying to cast in those conditions?
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, obviously, like you said, Lake Erie is no joke. Most of the Great Lakes, same way. When the weather gets like that and the winds are blowing like they are, the biggest thing is literally just take your time. You know, you got to get out there in one piece. You got to have your equipment has to be working, in order to make everything happen and to be successful. So it's honestly just take your time. Don't get in a hurry. Don't beat yourself up. Don't beat your equipment up, and get there in one piece. And then as far as when we actually started fishing, obviously you kind of want to run around a little bit, because it's like I said, it's not a spot on the spot. Just because you have a waypoint here from the day before, like, that's not where the fish are more than likely going to be at. There's so much current in Lake Erie that I think most people understand that, but then fish are just constantly moving. They're not sitting on a rock pile or something like that. They're all suspended, they're all moving, whether they're going east, west. So basically when I would get out there, I would just kind of do a little hot lap, you know, within a half mile or whatever of that area, and just try to figure out where that pot of fish might have moved to. And then basically with how big the waves were, which was actually kind of funny how big they were, you couldn't troll into them, obviously. So you'd basically just turn the boat sideways and just roll with the wind. And I think that the reason why, you know, the trollers or the casters were able to have the success that they did is honestly just because the amount of fish that there actually was. You know, if you go to some of these other bodies of water and you're looking at one fish every, or two fish or 10 fish, let's say, even every 100 yards, like, your opportunities are very, very limited. Whereas out there, it's like, make a cast. Oh, that cast didn't work. You're going 2 mile an hour. You make a cast at a different fish. So like you're almost casting constantly. So, like your odds and your percentage, like, I think John's maybe mentioned this, like one out of every 200 or whatever cast would actually be the right cast.
Right.
But then what would happen during that cast is you're just about down to the fish, and then a wave hits you and you get blown back 4 foot and you rip the bait away from the fish. The fish never even sees it. So then you're hammering on your trolling motor, trying to get back up there, trying to make the cast again. And just some of the different things that we would notice about the fish before we'd give up on that fish and start going again. Basically, you know, if that bait wasn't, you know, right on the fish, like as close as possible to the fish that you could get it, that fish wasn't going to bite just because of how dirty that water was. So just making the right cast, and just knowing that you are going to get 5 bites. Don't get frustrated with the wind. The only thing that you can do is basically laugh about it because of how big it was. And then just, you know, try to keep everybody safe, your co-angler, yourself included, from not falling out of the boat. On day two, one of my co-anglers actually, he fell down in the boat, and he was apologizing. He goes, "I just feel so clumsy." And I'm like, "Hey, man, no worries. If I wasn't basically strapped to the seat up front, I would be doing the same thing that you're doing. Like, you can't help it. Like, you're doing great." So it's a team effort. And yeah, just like I said, just take your time. Don't beat yourself up. And then we came in like 20 minutes early on day two, and it was just because the waves were so big around noon, that I was like, I got to give myself 30 minutes to get, you know, basically 10 or 12 miles back home. So to average 30 mile an hour, I'm like, geez, I don't want to push it. I don't want to wreck anything getting in. And the waves actually kind of went down a little bit, and we were able to run like 45 mile an hour, almost 50 mile an hour all the way in. Came in a little bit early, but we didn't break anything, and all was well.
And you had a good finish. Was it fifth or sixth?
Yep, I ended up in fifth.
Yeah, fifth. I mean, that's a great finish. You know, John is your teammate. He was in first. Yep. Were the area you were fishing in, I don't even know if you were fishing anywhere near John was, you know, but was there a lot of guys, like, were you sharing that school of fish with a bunch of trollers? Like how spread out do guys get out there?
You know, honestly, it's pretty open. Honestly, day one, I fished, a couple of areas that I had really, really high hopes for, in the tournament, and not knowing that I was going to even be able to get there on day two. You know, it wasn't that far, but it was, you know, 25 miles, I think, was the farthest area. But so I just kind of sampled them area one. I did a lot more running around than I probably should have. I had a couple of bites that I didn't execute very well on. And then I just also just kind of reconfirmed some areas that I was not going to go to on day two for the fact of the, is, you know, the water. There's two of my best spots that were 20 miles away were absolutely just tons and tons of mud. The fish were still sitting there, but the visibility was, you know, next to nothing. So I just knew that I wasn't going to make that run if I absolutely didn't have to, on day two. And day two, I actually fished, you know, it was relatively speaking on Lake Erie. I guess it's probably the same area, but, you know, I was within 2 or 3 miles of that on the first day, but never actually fished that general zone on day number one. And day number two, it was just basically when you're driving out there and you start marking the fish on your 2D, that's kind of the area that you're gonna, you know, start on. And if you need to move, you can start moving around a little bit. But for the most part, no. Day one, I was around quite a few more people than on day two. But when I say like around, like it's, you can see, you know, 30 boats, but it's spread out over, you know, basically as far as you can see. So 3, 4, 5 miles. Day two, at one point I did see John a couple times. I seen Dusty. There was 5 or 6 boats in that general area, but it's, like I said, again, it's Lake Erie. It's a giant, giant body of water. It's not a spot on the spot. It's basically try to find a little hot pot of fish, go through them, whip around, go right through them again. And then just, you know, if them fish are all 5 to 6 pounders, you know, you need to get out of there and start looking for them a little bit better, grade of fish. But yeah, I mean, on day two, the waves, they were so big that at times, John, I think he was like the closest I seen him, he was like a half mile from me. And, there was a couple of times I looked over and, like, huh, he must have, oh, nope, never mind. There he is. He was just down in a swell. So, I mean, it was seriously no joke out there. It was absolutely wild.
Did you feel like you had sort of like a size profile and color narrowed down? And was there any adjustments that you had to make to like maybe like size and profile, or maybe your line selection, or maybe rod, like any sort of recommendations like that, like adjustments that you might have made based on the conditions to help you fish those specific conditions that was tough? It was less than ideal. Like, that's an understatement, but like,
yep.
Was there any adjustments like that that made you just make a better cast? You know, maybe just maybe tell that story a little bit. I find that stuff to be really valuable.
Yeah. So the one, I would say probably the number one thing that I probably did, or there's probably two things that are probably the biggest, advice, I guess. And one of them was I went from using like 10 pound Suffix 832 or even up to 15 pound Suffix 832. And I went to Suffix nano braid, into an 8 pound diameter. Just, you know, you don't really notice it so much in, you know, like that first 20 feet of the water column, but you definitely notice it, in the last, you know, 10 feet or so, if you know, if you're fishing 30 foot down. So basically under 20 foot, I would really notice that my bait would start to hang up if I was using like that heavier line, probably for a couple different factors, you know, the current and then also the 30 mile an hour winds would just kind of hang it up. So I switched to that lighter line, and that would just basically allow my baits to get down that much faster. I never really adjusted my weights too much. But the one other thing that I really did that I think is probably some really good advice for most people is, you know, I'll see a fish coming at 60, 70, 80, 100 feet on forward facing. And the first thing you want to do is you want to bomb that cast out there and you want to get your bait right down to it right away. But the reality of it is that fish is, by the time you get close to that fish is either going to move, you're going to move, and the angle to see your bait and the fish at the same time is not going to be there at all. So I basically stopped casting at them fish that were at 60, 70, 80 feet, and I would start casting at the fish that were only at 30 feet. And it just allowed me to basically make a way more precise cast, and just make sure that my bait was getting in front of, you know, as many fish as possible and not having wasted casts, which don't get me wrong, like there are certain times where I was getting going so fast because I'd see a big one that I would make literally 5 bad casts in a row, and then I'd be reeling up where it was like that was my 3-second window that I needed to cast, and I just messed it up. So a lot of it, like I said, I think line choice for me, and then also just realizing that I can't cast that far in the wind.
I think those are big takeaways. I think any angler, you know, when you hear that stuff, because it's like you're fishing conditions that most people wouldn't fish. You know, I think right. Recreationally, like we're not going to.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been out there either. As much as I like it, as much as I like setting the hook on fish like that, I there's better times.
Yeah. Yeah, like you guys going over the Detroit River, you know, it's like you know, like if you were looking at it that way, right? And that's how most anglers, right? We kind of, we might not necessarily be able to pick the day that we can go fishing. We work hard all week. Saturday might be the day. And we might have to fish tough conditions, but we have more flexibility as, you know, with it not being a tournament scenario, that we can probably go find better boat landings to launch at and be safer. But still going fishing in tough conditions is a great learning curve. And, you know, yeah, again, I made this point with John. It's like, I think it's really important that we have a conversation about what you guys went through out there because, you know, especially the guys casting, I think trollers too, you know, I'm hoping that I can get somebody on here in the near future to talk about, you know, somebody that trolled out there a bunch. But, you know, we don't get many opportunities to really talk about those experiences, especially when they're fresh. Because we learn, you know, that there's a lot to learn from that. You know, I mean, this summer, anybody that fishes an average or, you know, more than average amount is going to fish in wind, enough of a wind that will affect boat control, enough of a wind that will affect ultimately what their expectations are for fishing that day. And the only way to exceed your own expectations, I think, is to, you know, you got to be able to think about what are some of these little things, what are some of these little details that I can make an adjustment, whether it's in the boat or in preparation of that kind of conditions, you know. And so, yeah, I appreciate that stuff. You never know, like, you know, the whole conversation that we have, but that little line selection for, you know, casting and getting, you know, getting an effective fall past 20 feet deep, that could be, you know, somebody listening to this, that could just be the biggest takeaway of the year. You know, and so I really, really appreciate those details, Dewey. With the last, you know, 5-8 minutes here, I would like to talk about tour level gold again, right? Last year, yep. We talked about it last year. I talked to somebody about it. I know I really enjoyed it last year. I think I think it was so cool because I don't think anywhere else you can find content that's like that, that is, it gives so much access to tournament anglers like yourself. I mean, if we really want to learn as much as we can to get better at fishing, we need to be learning from and taking advantage of an opportunity to, you know, have access to guys like you and John and the boys, right? It's like, if there's a seminar close by, go to it. If you guys are out fishing and you make an Instagram story, like, you know, it's all fun and games on social media, but, you know, if you, all those little nuggets, all those little things, always paying attention. And Tour Level Gold was like the next level access to you guys, and I loved it. And you guys are filming season two. What's, you know, you guys already did Lake Erie, maybe like an update on Tour Level Gold and how that kind of went, maybe some teasers, and just talk about what that's been like for you.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, like, this kind of starting from the beginning with Tour Level Gold, like, honestly, it was never really intended to be an informational fishing show or, like, to give anybody, like, you know, full access on this is why we do what we do, and this is, you know, this is where we go from point A to point B and all this other stuff. But just with how everything worked out and all the behind scenes stuff, it turned out to be exactly that. And then a whole lot more, whether it's inspiring somebody that has no clue what the behind the scenes are like, you know, at fish camp, or if they think they can do it or not. We hope what the end goal is that it does inspire more people to get excited about walleye fishing, whether it's, you don't have to be a tournament angler, you don't even have to like fishing, but just understand some of the behind the scenes, what it actually takes, or what, you know, goes into some of our decision making at the end of the day, for what we do, as you know, this is our livelihood, this is our job, and it's just the reason why some of these decisions can be so important and so valuable. And I just really hope that a lot of people can take a lot of that information away from that show, and it just gives a great insight to all these different techniques. Like I never knew what Max Wilson was using at the Sioux until I watched, you know, or watch that show, or I didn't know what John was doing at, you know, these certain places. But now you get the, you know, and I'll be honest, like, I haven't fished with John that much. I've shared the boat with him 5 or 6 days of my life, but now I get to basically be firsthand in his boat for 10 to 15 minutes each one of these episodes, and I can pick out all these little details on why he does what he does that might be different than me, or why that worked out for him and it didn't work out for me. So Tour Level Gold is just a really, really high quality production that we're all super proud to be a part of. And we just got done filming episode one of season two. And obviously John just won that one. So, you know, one other thing that we're doing this year is we're adding a couple new characters, which I think most people have probably already kind of figured out who they are, you know, from social media and whatnot, but I'm really, really excited to showcase them guys, the two new guys that we have. I think everybody probably already knows them. They're a couple legends already, so it's going to just be really fun to get some of their takes. And, you know, now that we have, you know, one of the new guys is on a different team, per se, so you basically get to see another fish camp. So it's something that's going to be really cool and really exciting. We're all super proud, and hopefully we can do this for a lot of years to come.
Yeah, I hope so too. Like, I hope that it's that kind of an experience for you guys. You know, I'm a consumer all the time. When I watch things, you know, being in the industry in the capacity that I am, a videographer, and, you know, I interview you guys, like, it never taints my, when I watch anything else, it's pure consumption. And I just, whether I'm entertained by it or whatever, but I think your experience, like, you know, kind of like you described, when you watch the episodes back, even though you were a part of it in your own way, immediately when you get a chance, and this is what I was relating to, like I was excited to watch the very first episode of it when it came out, just, you know, purely because I assumed I'd be entertained by it. I assumed that, you know, I'd be able to watch it and really enjoy the high production, and it would just be kind of fun to maybe hear some of the interviews. And again, it kind of just comes down to access. Like, you know, there's so few places that anybody can access, you know, individuals like yourself and the guys that are on there. Like, I'm not a tournament angler. I'm not trying to dissect the background and see where you're fishing or anything like that. Literally, though, but just seeing you in your natural element, just seeing you make a cast and, you know, seeing that real hook set and, you know, you're landing a fish and just your reaction to it and just sort of that body language. Inevitably, anybody that has just, you know, any lick of fishing experience and is open-minded watches that and gets a lot from it, you know. And so, yeah, I think it's cool to hear your reaction in that way too, because I think that's what it ended up being for me. You know, it was like, you know, the entertainment value is always there. I think, you know, the interviews and the storylines kind of carry their own weight. But, you know, seeing that fishing footage was super informational to me. Like, even if you're not describing, like on a television show, not describing exactly how you right. just did what you did, just seeing it for real is, yeah, it's just cool. I just took a lot from it. And so hopefully, yeah, the new characters this year, I'm definitely looking forward to that. In all the new storylines, it's definitely entertaining, but I like promoting it. I tell people, I steer people to it, because I just feel like, especially like, you know, intermediate anglers or, you know, just maybe above average anglers, when you watch it, it will teach you something about yourself too. And yep, I think that sure. that's the kind of content that I just hope, you know, continues to drive the industry. Anyways, man, well, we're good on time, if not long, and I'm taking up your time, man, but I really appreciate you being able to fit me in your schedule again. And I love the Lake Erie recap. There's a lot of great takeaways there for any angler, I believe. And yeah, I really appreciate it. I guess, yeah, like I always end these things, promote yourself or content or, you know, anything that you want to throw out there. Go ahead and we'll just sign it off that way.
Yeah. So basically, if you ever want to find me or follow me on any of my socials, it's just first name, last name, Dwayne Jelm. I'm on Instagram and same with Facebook. And then probably, honestly, the biggest advice that I can give anybody, whether it's you're starting out or you're a seasoned angler or whatever it is, I think I was just thinking about this self to my or to myself this morning, is like, what separates you or what makes you have a good finish or do well in some of these tournaments or even just fishing in general. And I guess this probably can be even applied to life in general, but it's just spending time doing what you love to do. So for me, it's literally spending time on the water. And that's how I learn a lot of the things that I do and figure out some of the new stuff that, you know, that it might not work at Red Wing when I go to the Red Wing in a couple of weeks. But when I go out fishing this afternoon, I might figure out something that in a year or 2 years, the same scenario pops up. And, you know, just that 2 hours of me going out fishing this afternoon might make the difference of me doing well or winning a tournament. So like I said, it's just spending time doing what you love to do, and jump all in.
That'll be how we end this thing. And I couldn't think of a better way too. So I, yeah, man, I'll let you go for real this time, but I appreciate it, Dewey.